This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who aspire to be. If you're a real estate, mortgage, or financial professional, this is the place for you. We'll explore innovative investment analysis, sales, marketing, and income-generating strategies for the most historically proven wealth creator, income property. Learn from the experts as they show you how to build a better business and a better life.
It's my pleasure to welcome William D. Cohen back to the show. He's been on before, and he's a columnist for the New York Times, a special correspondent for Vanity Fair, and formerly a columnist for Bloomberg View. He's author of Why Wall Street Matters, and the other best-selling books, The Last Tycoons and House of Cards. Bill, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great, Jason. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you back on the show. And, you know, everybody is asking, what should I expect with the new administration? You know, it looks like things are pretty optimistic. Deregulation, maybe, you know, for our real estate investors, softening or eliminating Dodd-Frank, which will, I think, be a boon to the real estate market, but, you know, may have some other unintended consequences. So, you know, take it wherever you want, but what can we look forward to?
Well, I think we were talking a little bit before. I mean, with Donald Trump, you never quite know what you're going to get, which is, you know, sort of an age-old negotiating tactic, which is fine if you're a real estate developer and you're negotiating for a space or a building contract or whatever it is. You know, it's a little more disconcerting with our president of the United States. But I think when it comes to financial deregulation, it seems that Trump and Congress have found or are talking about common ground. It doesn't seem like it's going to be nearly as contentious an issue as healthcare has been or tax reform will be. So I suspect that, and you know, he was talking about it again yesterday. I suspect that there will be some redesigning of financial regulation for Wall Street and big financial institutions and small and medium-sized banks as well that have been sort of begging for a relook at the regulations that are imposed upon them. You know, for me, the question becomes, you know, we have to be careful what we wish for. I think some of the regulations that Dodd-Frank has enacted and required are good, and those I put in that category, requiring banks to have more capital. I think that makes the banking sector safer. There's a reason that the American banking sector is in better shape than its counterparts in Europe or in Asia, and that's because they have more capital. I think requiring less leverage, demanding less leverage, is a good thing. I think the leverage requirements are now something like 15-1. Bear Stearns, at its height, intra-quarter used to report or talk about 50-1 leverage. That means that a 2% change in the value of assets on their books wiped out the equity, and obviously that's pretty much exactly what happened. Now it's 15-1, which means that, you know, a move in the valuation of all these assets would have to be something along the order of 7%, which is obviously a lot more. So I think that is a good thing. Having derivatives, hard to value securities, having derivatives traded on an exchange so that price discovery is easier, I think that's a good thing. You know, we could talk about the value or not of the Consumer Protection Financial Bureau. It's sort of a hard thing to be against, even though there are aspects of it that I don't particularly like. And, you know, we probably don't need more bureaucracy, and it would be nice if people took responsibility for their own actions instead of, you know, relying on the government. But I think that by and large, Dodd-Frank, all 2,300 pages of it, plus another 22,000 pages of rules and regulations, that have are still being written, although I think the acting head of the SEC put some of that on hold recently. So I think that the re-regulation plan was just excessive and over the top and ended up, the pendulum swings too far. There was no regulation before Dodd-Frank. Now there's too much regulation. And I think, unfortunately, it's had the effect, as people like Larry Summers and others have discussed, of creating what we call secular stagnation, or what he calls secular stagnation, that is sort of condemning our economy to grow at 2% a year. Last year it grew at 1.9% GDP growth. So I think we need to take some of these restrictions off, clean out some of the sand that's been thrown into the gears of the capital markets and the Wall Street machine, and get this thing humming again. Because I think once you do that, job creation increases, what you can pay people increases, innovation increases, new plant and equipment purchasing increases, and just all around, makes the economy run more efficiently and better, and people who want access to capital can get access to capital. And I think that is a fundamental thing in a capitalist society that we should strive for.
Yeah, very important. To sum that up then, the system has basically overcorrected. It's become too conservative and too tight with regulation. You know, it sounds like you believe that Trump will undo a lot of that and move the pendulum back to the other direction. I don't know if you think he might move it too far. I don't think any of us know, but it sounds like you think we're moving in the right direction, at least with the statements the Trump administration has made. I particularly liked that one, right when he took office, that, for every new regulation, you got to repeal two. Now, granted, that could become reckless, I guess, but it in concept, it sounded like a good idea to me.
that's sort of like one of those phrases that Trump says, who knows what that really means. But I mean, I think this is a moment for a scalpel, not a sledgehammer, but unfortunately, Trump strikes me as kind of a sledgehammer kind of a guy. So, frankly, I have been an advocate lately, and I discuss this a little bit in my book, of what I call a grand bargain that I think Trump, who fancies himself the deal maker in chief, should undergo with Wall Street. And basically, the grand bargain is this: we'll take off some of these onerous regulations that you don't like. We'll get rid of the Volcker rule. We'll get this machine humming again. But in exchange, what we would like you to do is to revamp your incentive system, revamp the reward system on Wall Street, revamp the compensation system on Wall Street that, frankly, has been rewarding people to take big risks with other people's money for about the last 50 years, and has gotten firms and our economy into trouble, time and time again. And I think, I think the worst thing would be, quite honestly, if he takes a sledgehammer to the rules and regulations and the laws, and does not also demand that Wall Street change its compensation system, because we've sort of seen that movie before. We saw that in 2005, 2006, 2007. It was a period of virtually no regulations. The Glass-Steagall Act had been repealed. There were no regulations on derivatives. We had Christopher Cox as head of the SEC, the surfer chairman of the SEC, as I like to refer to him as. Wall Street, of course, had a party, and it was great. They had a great time. But unfortunately, it led to, in many respects, the excesses that we experienced and the collapse that we experienced in 2008. And I don't think we want to go through that again. So, yes, by all means, take off some of these regulations that are onerous and gumming up the beautiful machine. But please, please, please demand in return that Wall Street change its incentive system so that people are not rewarded to take big risks with other people's money, which is exactly what's happening now, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's all a matter of degree, isn't it?
Absolutely. Look, if we didn't want there to be any car-related deaths, we would not allow any cars to be driven at all. You could have a car, you could keep it in your garage, you could look at it, but you couldn't drive it. Obviously, nobody is talking about that. If we didn't want to have any financial crises, we could eliminate all banks. But nobody is talking about that. And that obviously is ridiculous. But what we do need, just like with cars, is we allow cars on the road. We have speed limits. We have seat belts. We demand that people don't drive drunk. We need the same kind of smart regulation on Wall Street. We need banks to have a lot of capital. We need them to not have a lot of leverage. And we need them to have an incentive system that rewards good behavior, not bad behavior.
You know, Trump talked a lot about draining the swamp. You know, the criticism of his cabinet is that it looks like there's a lot of swamp dwellers in there. Would you agree with that? Or do you just sort of need those people, you know, because they have the resumes, they know how the system works, right? It seems like you can't, you know, maybe that's not a fair criticism. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think it's really a mistake to make blanket judgments about any group of people. If we said, I'm sorry, we can't have any blacks be in the cabinet. I'm sorry, we just can't do that. I don't care if they're qualified or not. We're just not going to have it. There aren't going to be any black people who are in Washington or in a cabinet or at the White House. I mean, that is obviously beyond ridiculous, completely discriminatory and unfair. And frankly, if you say, like Elizabeth Warren has been saying, I'm sorry, we can't have any people who worked on Wall Street in the White House. We can't have any people who worked on Wall Street in the cabinet. I find that equally discriminatory. People on Wall Street come from all walks of life, have all sorts of different experiences, are generally very intelligent. And if you're successful and then you want to give something back to through public service and you want to, in effect, give up your high paying job to go do that and you can make it through a Senate confirmation hearing, well, why the heck not? Why wouldn't we want those people in Washington? I mean, you know, I think you want people in the Treasury Department, people on the National Economic Council, people who in the Commerce Department, who understand capital markets, who understand Wall Street, who understand capital structures, who understand finance. I think that would be an asset, not a liability. I hate to make blanket statements. Now, Donald Trump has, for whatever reason, invited a lot of people from Goldman Sachs into his White House and into his cabinet. Basically, I don't really have a problem with that. I mean, I think a little goes a long way. I think he's taken it to the limit here, which is, I think enough is enough. Basically, I don't have any problem with it. These are smart people. If they can get through a Senate confirmation hearing and they want to give up their lucrative job, then they should.
Okay. Talk to us about what you expect in the economy and particularly the real estate market, if you have any thoughts, and interest rates and such.
Well, obviously, interest rates are now headed up. I think that's a good thing, both because they were kept artificially low. I mean, interest rates are a commodity. The price of money is a commodity that is like any other commodity. It is driven by the supply and demand. And I think after the financial crisis, the Fed decided to move into the market in a big way through quantitative easing, buying trillions of dollars of high-yield securities and mortgage-backed securities. The Fed's balance sheet went from $850 billion before the financial crisis to something like $4.5 trillion today. So obviously the Fed was this big kahuna going into the market and I think clearly manipulating the price of money, manipulating interest rates and forcing them down by driving up the price of the securities that they were buying. And any market, anytime you manipulate the price of something that should be left to supply and demand, that's not a good thing. So the good news is that for like a year plus now, quantitative easing has been ending, and slowly but surely interest rates are moving up to reflect the price of money and the risk risk associated with borrowing money. I think the problem has become that with money being priced so cheaply, investors are desperate for yield, what I call the yield hunger games, and that's not healthy. That creates bubbles, that creates high inflated prices of assets, and that never ends well. And so I'm glad that the Fed is starting to raise interest rates, and I hope we can get out of it without an asset bubble explosion.
Okay, so the question of more specifically, and I agree with all that, where do you think the economy is going? I mean, are good times ahead? The sentiment is really good. The optimism seems very high right now. Is that warranted?
Let's be clear. The economy has been good for a number of years now. It has been good in the last few years of the Obama administration, basically the second 4 years of the Obama administration. The market has gone from 6,500 to 18,000, and now from 18,000 to 21,000 under Mr. Trump. Unemployment is, 4.7%, having nothing to do with Mr. Trump. So let's give credit where credit is due. I mean, the Obama administration did a pretty darn good job getting us out of the Great Recession and getting things back on track. How much more Trump can do, given where things are now, I'm not exactly sure. I don't really see how unemployment rate can go down much further. We're sort of at the structural limits, which means that wages are going to have to rise, which is probably a good thing, all things considered. Unless, of course, Trump is right and there's, another whatever, 90 million people or something that he said are underemployed. I find that really hard to believe. Another analysis says there's another 7 million people who are underemployed. I guess if that's the case.
I don't know. Just anecdotally, though, I do see a lot of underemployed people. I mean, a lot of highly educated people working, Uber, Starbucks, a lot of homelessness. I mean, the homelessness problem seems like it's just out of control. It's so sad. Tent cities. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. That wasn't like that years ago,
Maybe because I live in New York City, there are more homeless people on the streets now under de Blasio, the current mayor, than there certainly seem to be under Bloomberg, the former mayor. And maybe it's because Bloomberg, dipped into his own pocket and rounded up all these people and put them in homeless shelters, and de Blasio isn't doing that. I don't know. You're right. I mean, there obviously are a lot of people who used to have high-paying jobs and now work for Uber or Starbucks or are homeless and wandering. There are a lot of people whose jobs have disappeared and need retraining. But, that's a very difficult problem that I don't really see how a president, unless a president decides to allocate billions of dollars to, retraining centers in each state and each community that somehow retrain. I mean, it's nice to talk about retraining people, and it's certainly a worthy goal, but how do you actually do that? Somebody who, say, was working on a auto production line in Detroit, and that line goes away, goes to Mexico, goes to Japan, goes to China, or goes to North Carolina. And now, they have to be, retrained to do data entry at Facebook or Google? I'm not exactly sure how it really works in the real world. And I think that is a big problem. And that's why there are so many people who were once so gainfully and happily employed who are not anymore, who may have dropped out of the workforce. But I'm not sure how you get them back in the workforce.
Yeah, well, it's obviously a challenge, but having money flowing you know, flowing freely is certainly one of those potential answers.
I agree.
I think we'd agree on that. Yeah. Okay. Well, anything else about what to expect from the Trump administration in terms of the economy? And let's wrap it up and have you give out your website.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, there's talk of tax cuts. There's talk of an infrastructure proposal. There's obviously talks of reforming Wall Street regulation. I think, you know, the question is does Donald Trump have the political capital to get these things done? And I think, you know, that's a big question right now after the healthcare debacle. So we'll see. If he reforms taxes, if he reforms regulations, if he repatriates trillions of profits from overseas, if he implements a big infrastructure program, yeah, it could be happy days, could be here again.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, give out your website. Tell people where they can find out more.
Sure. My website is WilliamCohan.com. And my books are there. My recent articles are there. How to get in touch with me is there. So have at it.
Bill, thanks so much for joining us. It's great to have you back.
Thank you, Jason, for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.